The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Things that just can't stay the same. If I got any worse problem, I'll have myself to blame.
Time now for the second hour of the Jimmy Sangenberger Show here on News Talk 710 KNUS. Little Johnny Lang bringing us back, singing about how there's got to be a change. And folks, we've been talking a lot about Denver public schools lately in the context of the Tay Anderson saga. But all around Colorado and across the country, there's got to be a change with our public school system, starting with the school boards. And that's why I am so pleased to spend some time tonight. And we will do a lot more on the issues of education reform and school board elections and more here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. And tonight, I want to kick off the conversation with our first couple of candidates as we zero in on the Douglas County School Board. This is a race where there are four seats up. And let me tell you, it has been so surprising in many respects, but also distressing to see what's gone on in Douglas County schools of all districts in this state. We need a change indeed. And there is a campaign for four different school board members, candidates, unified together in the platform of Kids First DCSD. These candidates include Becky Myers and Kaylee Weingar. We will have both of them on next month here on the show. And tonight, I'm so pleased to be joined by two of the four candidates for Douglas County School Board that need our support, Christy Williams and Mike Peterson. Welcome to you both. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us tonight.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks, Jimmy. Happy to be here.
Great to have you both. And we'll go lady first here on the show, but I am so pleased you got a slate of four candidates. And Christy, why don't we start with you? Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, why you're running, and maybe your thoughts on this group of four that you've got?
Yeah. So I'm just a hop, skip, and a jump from Douglas County over in Arapahoe County. I went to Heritage High School. My husband and I have been married about 15 years and moved to Castle Rock from Denver about 11 years ago. We have three kids attend American Academy Charter School in Castle Pines. We have a kindergarten, a fifth grader, seventh grader. So spanning quite the age range there. You know, I've joined the PTO. I was president and in the last year, I've been on the School Accountability Committee, and most recently have served on the District's Accountability Committee. Been pretty involved with the school district for a number of years, and over the last year in particular, seeing, you know, kids not being in school 5 days a week broke my heart, considering my kids were in school 5 days a week, and I just see a very big need to fill that academic gap that we've now created. So I want to step up and make sure that we can get it for our kids.
Thanks, Christy. Yeah, I think it's so important to make sure that we get out of this pandemic situation on the right foot. And that, Mike Peterson, is why school board elections are so critical coming up this November. Talk to us about your background. I know you're a retired U.S. Navy commander. Thank you so much for your service. Who is Mike Peterson? Why are you running for school board in Douglas?
Sure. I'm Mike Peterson. I've been in Colorado since 2004, since I came here on military orders. Grew up on the East Coast, was a product of the Philadelphia public school system. joined the Navy, went to the Naval Academy for 4 years, and then did 21 years in the Navy after commissioning. I was so important to the Navy that they actually issued me a chauffeur. So I spent most of my time in the back of an F-14 flying around off the carrier and doing those things. Towards the end of my career, I got to be the executive officer of a little overseas naval base called Diego Garcia for a year. And then I finished up my time in the Navy right down the road in Colorado Springs as a assistant professor at the Air Force Academy. After that, I did about 10 years of consulting, doing performance and organizational improvement, mostly for the oil and gas industry, onshore, offshore, globally, around the world. And why would I run for this position? Because like a lot of parents, I assumed a lot of things that were going on in the schools. And the disruption granted by COVID, if there was anything good about that, is while I was working out of the house last year, my kids were in school in the home. And I got to hear some of the things that were going on and started waking up to what was actually happening in the schools. Then I started monitoring school board meetings, and I wasn't seeing a lot of advocacy. I was seeing a lot of deferring to other organizations in the state, whether it was Tri-County Health, whether it was Colorado Department of Health and Environment. And I didn't see anybody really actively fighting to represent what the parents and even teachers and students wanted in the district. So I thought I'd get back in the fight. As far as the candidates, we got a great slate. You're going to get to hear from Christy tonight. She's wonderful. She represents charter schools as a charter school mom. She went right into the workforce out of high school and has been running a very successful business for over 15 years and really represents that vocational track and a charter voice. We've never had an active charter voice on the school district, even though 25% of our kids go to charter schools. I represent some of the military track and is a father of three daughters, one of which has special needs. I hope to be an advocate for that community, special needs, effective needs, and a lot of our kids that are seeking an alternate education. And then we've got Becky Myers. Becky, you'll get to hear from later. She's awesome. Been a teacher in the school for over 20 years in the district, so she has that experience. Put kids through Douglas County Schools and now has three grandkids in the school. So she's got a wealth of wisdom to draw upon and classroom experience. And then finally, you'll get to meet Kaylee Weininger as well. Kaylee represents the young moms out there. I'm sure they'll all relate to her. And she's got a wonderful background in accounting and finance. So she knows how to read a profit and loss sheet and help manage budgets and make sure that all the resources we have here in Douglas County are being well taken care of.
And I look forward to talking with Becky and Kaylee in a few weeks here on the show. Christy Williams, one thing that was so striking hearing Mike break down the four of you is that it seems like we've got a tremendous slate in Douglas County of candidates that bring different things to the table, but that are all complementary in their own ways. Talk to me about that.
Yeah. So it's been really awesome getting to know these three people so well over the last couple months. We kind of just pulled together very grassroots and met each other. Very blessed to be working with such a diverse group. You know, as Mike said, I can bring to the table a lot of the different routes that people take out of high school. Not everybody wants to do that 4 years of college thing, and I want to be able to advocate for that. You know, Mike having a special needs child really can understand and empathize with that group of parents that want what's best for them. And with Becky, gosh, she's amazing. Just have being a teacher. I love teachers. They're so awesome. So just thankful that we have someone to represent that. And just being with Kaylee and just her wealth of knowledge, as Mike said, with the whole finance aspect. And she has a daughter just entering kindergarten. So she's got a big fight in this game, a long road ahead of her. And gosh, it's just fun to know everybody and understanding what we all can bring to the table, and it's all so good because we just bring different strengths to the table.
Christy, talk to me a little bit more, especially since you all have different things that you bring to the table. You have a passion clearly for charter schools and for choice and educational opportunity for parents. Expand upon that and what the charter school environment is like from your vantage point and how it needs that voice on the board.
So, almost 11 years ago, it's some time to believe that our oldest is going to entering seventh grade, but when he entered school about 8 years ago, we kind of looked at all different options to see what was best for our son, and we ended up landing on a charter school. And I think the most important thing is that I know my family the best, I know my kids the best, and I trust that every other parent out there knows their kids better than I do. So I think that it's important to have choice. I think it's great that you can choose what's best for your kid, and it might be one or another. I can tell you right now, I have my kids at an academy, but they're at two different campuses because one fit just wasn't working, so we moved to a different campus, and that's okay because I have choice, and I'm very thankful that I had it. So, you know, I want to advocate for that. I can tell you, being in a charter, I understand the value of parent engagement, and I would really love to, you know, bring excitement around, you know, being at the school, parents being able to be involved in their kids' education, and just the impact that it has for kids in that environment.
Once again, here on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show, we are talking with two candidates, part of the Kids First DCSD team for school board in Douglas County Schools, Mike Peterson and Christy Williams, here on 710 KNUS. Mike, when we talk about school choice and parents being able to make the best decisions for their kids, you clearly have a passion coming from your own family situation, but also knowing so many other special needs parents, for making sure that kids get the kind of quality education that they need based on their own learning circumstances. Expand upon that one, please, because to me, if you don't have school choice, then you risk kids being left behind. If you don't have school districts that are focused on providing the best quality education for the kids first, there you go, from the group, then you're not doing your job in the public school system.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Jimmy. And one of our first principles is to always put Douglas County student-centered decision-making first. Anything that we would do as the board, it has to be, again, the right thing for Douglas County, not for the rest of the nation, not for Washington, D.C., not even for next door Denver. It has to be right for Douglas County. And the first question we have to ask ourselves is this helping our students? And that's going to go into all our decision making. But choice is absolutely critical. And one of the good things is, because of the history of local governance in schools in Colorado, we can offer that choice. We already have open enrollment, and you can send your child to the local neighborhood school geographically. You can choice them into a different neighborhood school. And as I mentioned, 25% of our students and parents that choose public schools choose that charter school option. So the more choices we can offer, and the lower level we can make the decisions, the better it is. One of the things I've observed with this recent board is there seems to be a lot of things being done to people instead of things being done with people. Mm-hmm. So part of that choice that we want to offer is to make sure we push all decisions down to the individual school level, because we know that a collaboration of parents, principals, staff, and teachers at that local school will make better decisions that honor their community's expectations than us trying to do anything top down from the board or through the superintendent. So I think it's that flexibility, getting choice as close to the parents as possible, that's really going to improve the culture and improve the outcomes here in Douglas County Schools. And we're committed to making sure that happens.
Christy Williams, Mike was just saying that we need to make sure that schools are honoring communities' expectations. I wrote recently a column for the Washington Examiner in which I, in part, talked about how there are parents all across the country, right here in Colorado and all around the nation, who don't feel like school boards are listening to them. What's your sense for that and the role of school board members in making sure that they are being attentive to what the parents of the kids in the district are saying?
Well, I think it's pretty clear when you have 3 hours of parent comment, which is what our school board meetings have had, between 2 to 3 hours over the last couple months. It shows that there's been a lack of listening from the school board. And so I want to be held accountable. I want the community to hold me accountable. And I know that the other three candidates feel the same way. It's very clear that there is a lot of disagreements going on between school boards and parents and community members, students, teachers, everything. So, you know, when you have that many hours of feedback, you're probably not doing something right. You're probably not listening. And I think that would be the first clue. And I think that if you're being transparent about how things are being implemented in your schools, you won't have those sorts of things.
Yeah, I think there's a failure of leadership, Christy, that we are seeing in districts like Douglas County Schools, which is, you're right, not listening and not showing leadership in actually working with parents.
Right. Yeah. No, I want a board that's going to listen. I want a board that's going to show integrity, that when you send a survey out and you have overwhelmingly parents voting one specific way and you go another way, it just shows a very big lack of leadership. It's a lack of courage. It shows a lack of wanting to do what's best for your community. And I want to be someone that you can hold accountable and that you can say they listened.
Mike Peterson, one thing that Douglas County Schools has increasingly been incorporated are ideas of equity that tie in, for example, with critical race theory, which a lot of parents are concerned about. And I did some reporting in the Denver Gazette recently about the Gemini Group being hired to do presentations and workshops for educators. It seems to me that there is a declining focus in Douglas County Schools, as with other school districts, in what schools are supposed to be about, which is preparing kids for the future, focusing on things like reading, writing, arithmetic, what's been called the three R's, and so forth. And how do we bring Douglas County Schools back into focus on those things that are what kids need coming up from K through 12?
Yeah, certainly equity, things around CRT. I just got done saying we don't want to bring national level issues into Douglas County unless they're already here. And this is a discussion that's been going on, and a lot of effort and time has been spent by the school board to craft an educational equity policy and to, you know, steward its implementation. I think that the first thing we need to focus on, especially coming out of a disrupted year of COVID, is rebaselining where our kids are, right? Finding out what COVID did to them. Some excelled online, some barely hung on, and some definitely got left behind, not just academically, but socially and emotionally. We saw suicide rates go into a crisis mode here in Douglas County in the metro area, you know, cited by Children's Hospital. Yet we disrupted the entire year for COVID reasons and others. So one of our goals is to put academics first, academic growth and achievement, and to look at it at the individual level. We think every child needs to be met where they are and get them to where they can be and fulfill their promise as individuals, whether that's a gifted student, whether that's just a mainstream classroom student, or whether that's a special needs student. Meet them where they are and get them to where they need to be, and that has to be primary. As far as the equity issue and discussion, I really listen when parents speak out in support of the policy, because I'm really listening for what they like about it and why they support it. And the words that I'm hearing there are inclusion, belonging, educational opportunity. So let's keep those good aspects of whatever policy we have, but then let's also define the negative things we don't want here. So when I listened to the Gemini Group training, I heard a lot of division. I heard a lot of binning people by groups. I heard a lot of stuff about intersectionality and intentions don't matter. And we don't want anything divisive in schools. You just mentioned leadership, Jimmy. And what great leaders do is they discover what's universal and common, and they capitalize on it. They rally people towards a common, better future. And the really good leaders can only succeed when they cut through differences of race, sex, age, nationality, personality, and they tap into those things that we all share. Mm-hmm. So whatever we do in schools, it should be unifying, and it should always be in support of academic growth and achievement.
This is such a hot button issue. Christy Williams, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I think anytime, you know, you're shaming someone for any reason, whether that be, you know, race, religion, gender, you're literally making people feel separate from one another. And that's what I took from the Gemini Group And I don't want to do that. I want everyone to feel welcomed. I want everyone to feel like we're meeting them as unique individuals, that every person, regardless of what track they're on, if they're in the gifted programs, if they're in the special education programs, if they're in mainstream, that we're treating them all as unique individuals, and that we're giving teachers, we're empowering them to be able to help each child reach their own potential. So, as far as the equity policy goes, you know, like Mike said, are there parts of it that are really great that we should hold on to? Sure. Are there other policies that already have those tenets in there? Probably. And those are things that we need to evaluate as a board. You know, what should we keep and what do we need to move?
Again, we are go ahead.
Yeah, just to build upon what Christy said, how we get there is really important. We don't need another board coming in and doing things top down again to people. We need to do things with people. So anything we can do to increase that dialogue and make sure that whatever policies we have are clear, that they're concise, and that they reflect what the total community, the taxpayers, the parents, the teachers, the staff, to reflect that common vision, that common ground. That's what we want to do. In regards to this equity policy, there are things like CRT that are divisive and we don't want in our schools, but we will do whatever it takes to support unity, belonging, and good aspects of what's intended.
You want to make sure that you are putting as your group, the four Douglas County School District board candidates, say, Kids First DCSD. Christy Williams and Mike Peterson, our guests, running for school board in Douglas County, along with Becky Myers and Kaylee Weinger. And we will have both Becky and Kaylee on in a few weeks to get their take on what's happening. But I want to give a final word. Christy, if you could please wrap it up for us and tell us where folks can go to learn more about you all and your campaign, and share a final word.
Sure. You can find us on vote for the number 4 Kids First. DCSD? Vote for Kids First, DCSD.com.
Vote for Kids First.com, and it's the number 4.
Yes. And so you can find all of our bios on that page. You can also find us all on Facebook with our names, Christy, and then the number 4, DCSD. Same with Kaylee, Mike, and Becky. Find us there. We update our page pretty regularly with lots of issues and those sorts of things. And we just really want to bring forth a community. We want to unify back together and get away from this divisive community that's been happening. We want to really listen to the community so that we can, you know, pull back together. And I love this district, and we can do that.
Another webpage I have here also, simply kidsfirstdcsd.com, and on Facebook, kidsfirstdcsd. Mike Peterson, Christy Williams, best of luck to you both. We will have you back on, I'm sure, before the election. Thanks so much for stepping up. It's so important that we right the ship and bring about the change we need in Douglas County schools.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Once again, Mike Peterson and Christy Williams joining us from Kids First DCSD. We need to set Douglas County schools on the right course. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, candidate for Centennial City Council, Robin Carnes, will join us here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show as we continue News Talk 710 KNUS.
Call it what you want,
hot
calls and messing with the kids.
Rocking and rolling back on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show, News Talk 710, KNUS, final segment, and this is a fun, rocking good cover by Papa Chubby of the late, great blues harp player Junior Wells' tune, Messing with the Kid. Which, by the way, whenever I put together a blues band of my own, like I did at the Republican Women of Weld event up at the historic Fort Lupton a couple weeks ago, this is a tune that we always play, of course, with harmonica being a central focus. And I actually do the vocals. There are only a handful of songs where I can get away doing the vocals when performing some blues. And this actually is one of them, a slightly different version than the fast-paced, guitar-heavy one that we got from Papa Chubby. Right there, as we continue, best bumper music known to man, nearly 8 years running, right here on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show, News Talk 710 KNUS. Don't be messing with the kid, and don't be messing with our communities when we want to make them a better place, such as the city of Centennial. And I am so pleased to be joined this evening by candidate we need in District 1 of Centennial. She's running for the very first time in political office for any sort of position. Robin Carnes joins me here on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show. Robin, welcome to the program.
Hey, Jimmy, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you on. I appreciate it. I'm very much looking forward to our conversation. I am known from music and from radio for my energy, and I might have met my match with you, Robin, let me tell you.
Well, Jimmy, you play the best music, I have to tell you. And I love jazz myself. I mean, I used to play tenor sax myself. I don't know if you knew that, but hey, you've got great taste.
No, I just learned that you sung opera and you studied music education.
I did. I did. I went to the University of Northern Iowa, and yes, got a BA in music education. I actually also interned with the Chicago Symphony in their education department. I mean, the beauty of music is it brings communities together.
Yes.
It brings cultures together.
Yes.
You know, that's something we need.
That's exactly right. I have said that so often myself. And we need that kind of unity right now on local levels, too, in running for office. And I know that that's something that is important to you. So tell me a little bit more about yourself and why you, Robin, are running to be on the City Council of Centennial.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, there's that song, Red, Brown, Yellow, Black, and White. We've got to back the blue, and we all must unite, right? Because I look at what's going on, and I'm disgusted with how divisive things have gotten. I'm concerned about the direction of our country. I mean, I'm a mom, I've got two young boys, I'm married to law enforcement, and I want to make sure our city, our neighborhood, our community stays a wonderful place to live. I mean, I've been part of Centennial's Tapestry for 18 years, and it's been a great city. We're celebrating our 20th birthday, in fact, our 20th anniversary, and there's a reason why we're great, but we want to make sure we stay great. And so, you know, when you think about politics, they're local. The local races really, really matter. And so when I looked at kind of the landscape and went, okay, where can I get plugged in? Because I feel called to politics. We cannot just sit back and complain anymore. We have to get involved. And so when I looked at what was available, it was city council. Mm-hmm. Kathy Turley's seat was open, right? In fact, I met her. It was so funny. A couple years ago at a 4th of July barbecue, a pool party. Mm-hmm. And I met her and she said, you know, you should run for my seat. And I went, huh, I don't know about that. You know, I knew very little at that time about what city council did. But additional, you know, more things happened, including some craziness with, you know, the presidential race that we just experienced. I had an opportunity to become a precinct leader. I got involved in local campaigns and really learned kind of what it took. I also read an absolutely must read for anybody who is concerned about the politics here in Colorado. It's called The Blueprint.
Yes.
And it was how the state went from blue to red. And let me tell you, it's a very clear strategy that we as conservatives can learn a lot from. So I got so fired up. I read a strategic plan. I'm like, okay, here's what they did. Now here's what we need to do.
Right.
And so, you know, kind of just waited for, it's not rocket science. We just have to work together and come together, and we can be just as competitive.
I think that's so well put. And by the way, I forgot that District 1 is currently held by Kathy Turley. I've known Kathy since I was in high school. Great that you're running for that position. To be sure, I think you'd be great filling those shoes. And, you know, one thing that I love is when we have somebody who's never been in politics before, who's got the fire in your belly to actually say, I want to step up and run, especially for a local position like city council in Centennial. What do you bring to the table from an experience and skill set standpoint that sets you apart, especially from your opponent, but from everybody else?
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you brought that up, Jimmy. I have a wealth of a diverse background, which, you know, some people can be critical of, but I think it helps me become a much more adept candidate. So just a snapshot. Where do I come from? I'm an Iowa farm girl, conservative to the bone, right? But I also have the background in education. I spent some time at Visit Denver in sales and marketing, getting all of Denver's frontline staff ready to be the friendliest place on earth for a major national political convention back in 2008. I also went to seminary. I got my master's from Denver Seminary. I've spent time in churches. I've worked in nonprofits, most recently working for a national nonprofit called Rescue America, where we fight sex trafficking. I also spent a stint of time as a consultant out in Silicon Valley, working as a facilitator. What does a facilitator do? It brings people from different sides together to consensus. I had to work with the software engineers and to get them to work with the marketers so they could put on these fantastic user conferences. So I look at my background and I believe everything that I've done this far has prepared me to walk with people from all walks of life, from kids, you know, all the way to seniors, to really understand, you know, where they're coming from. I think another major, you know, selling point for me is I am a cusper, which means I was born in 78. So I'm just a tail end of Gen X. A lot of people think I'm a millennial. I'm not, but I've got Gen Z kids. My parents are boomers. And so I think we're really good at bridging the different generations together, which, let's just face it, that has to happen.
Yeah.
We need everyone. We can't just segregate. We've got to come together and focus on what we have in common.
Well, as a millennial, I approve of that message, Robin Carnes, candidate for Centennial City Council. You are a registered Republican, although, of course, this is technically a nonpartisan position, which is important because people like that in their local officials. They want local officials in, say, city council or school board or what have you to not be focusing on things from a partisan vantage point, but on a what's best for the city of Centennial. So let me ask you a big picture question, then we'll drill down into a few issues. What's your overall philosophy on governing and on engaging with citizens in a community that you would represent?
The power needs to belong to the people. That's the bottom line. And as an elected official, I work for the people. So I represent them. I am their voice. We do not need a big government to be making decisions for us. Because you know what? Every neighborhood and every community knows their neighborhood and knows their community best. So they will be most educated on making the best decisions for their environment. So it's limited government. It's really empowering the constituents to do what they believe needs to be done in their neighborhoods and communities, whether it's housing, whether it's business, whether it's law enforcement, mental health, you name it. The people need to have the power.
Yeah, empowering individuals is critical, and especially when it comes to the community that's the most localized, where you're closest to the people and your neighbors, and you're able to engage on a day-to-day basis. That's one of the things that's so interesting when it comes to a city council position. And so empowering constituents, absolutely critical. And constituents in Centennial, I know, as with I'm an Aurora resident all across this Front Range, really, especially in the Denver metro area, in Centennial, they're concerned about personal safety and security. They want to be able to feel comforted in their communities, that crime isn't going to be running rampant, especially violent crime, that you're going to have the police there to do their job. You're not going to have the hands, and your husband's a law enforcement, the hands of police officers tied. Talk to us about that personal safety and security piece.
Absolutely. I mean, that really, if you have to boil it down, what is city council really responsible for? It's streets and safety. And if you think about it, every street leads to a home or a business or a school or a place of worship. So really, because truth and safety doesn't always really spell, you know, but if you think about it, it's people and pathways. And when you think about streets and pathways, we do not want to go down the pathway of socialism, right? We don't in any way, shape, or form. We want to make sure that our blue are backed. We've got to make sure that our school resource officers are supported so that, and our law enforcement is supported to keep the peace, to keep the order, so that our kids are not only safe in the schools, but also outside of schools, when they're at sports practice or when they're, you know, riding around the neighborhood, doing what kids need to do, playing outside and just enjoying it. And when we handcuff our law enforcement, they cannot do their job. And guess what? We've already seen it. We've seen it in cities where this has happened. The crime rate has skyrocketed. So we've really got to think through, how are we going to support our law enforcement officers? Now, there's bad apples, because we know what's gone on in the nation, right? There's bad apples in every single industry. But here's a thought. I've got a friend who's an anesthesiologist. And he said, what do we do when the doctors screw up? Do we humiliate them and criminalize them as much as we have with law enforcement? Yeah. Absolutely not. So let's give some grace for these men and women who do not get paid like they should, right? I mean, let's call a spade. They should be paid more when they risk their lives day in and day out. I mean, you look at the perks out there for all of our military, which I have two brothers that are Air Force. I love the military. I come from a military family, but let's give those perks to law enforcement as well, because they're doing it day in and day out. And they are the local representation of who needs to enforce the law, who keeps us safe day in and day out.
I think that's so well put, and especially at this crucial time, it is needed. Look, the reality is, Robin, that we are seeing crime skyrocket in the Denver metro area. Car thefts. Last year, I was a two-time victim of auto theft, once from my complex, and then again from and that was in Aurora, and then again in Commerce City from my auto body shop, and then also was victim of car vandalism, and like I had very bad karma last year, let me tell you, Robin. But that kind of thing is expanding all across the Denver metro area, including in places like Centennial. What do you think needs to be done in order to help enhance the safety and security in supporting our police officers?
I think we need to allow them to do our job. Listen, when I went to school for education, I had a cooperating teacher who said, you do not give kids three chances to mess up. You don't give them three strikes and they're out. Because guess what happens? They have two more times to screw up and disrupt the entire class. So you nip it in the bud immediately. And so guess what? People are vandalizing cars, and crime is spreading rampant because they know they're not going to get caught. Or if they get caught, they're not going to get penalized really that badly. So then they continue because they know the consequence is not that severe. If we provide a consequence, maybe things will shift slightly. Yeah. So we need to back our blue. We need to make sure that we have adequate jails and prisons. Mm-hmm. And we need to make sure that, my gosh, the mental health of our officers is positive. I have to tell you, from even just conversations with my husband, I mean, if you're ever going to get arrested by anybody, you would want to get arrested by my husband, because he has such wonderful respect for all of mankind. I mean, he is the truest example of a public servant, and really is in it for the right reasons. Now, he's doing this because he feels called. So, gosh darn it, give him a pat on the back. Thank him for what he's doing. Yeah. Don't belittle him and make him wonder, should I now at my middle age go look for another job? Because I'm telling you, that is what is spreading rampant right now among all law enforcement. Is they're going, should I move elsewhere? Should I pursue another career? And then what, you know?
Well, and that comes from so much of this legislation that we've seen on qualified immunity and other things have just been tying the hands of our law enforcement to such an extreme point, and it is deeply concerning. And you mentioned mental health in regards to police officers, but we do have a broader mental health crisis in our society today. Last year, I started talking about my own experiences with depression and clinically diagnosed depression and anxiety, and an instance where I almost committed suicide and so forth. And it's such an under-focused aspect that I think is finally getting some more attention, but we really need to have leaders who are talking about issues like mental health, I think, Robin Carnes.
Yes, we absolutely do. And that is something that I really want to take a look at. A good friend of mine, she works for a local hospital, and she has said, we have got to make sure we know, especially where our kids are at. I mean, when you see what happened with COVID, it shut the whole country down. And Guess what? It alienated us from each other. And we are human beings. We need each other. And so we've got to look at, and we've got to be checking in with each other and making sure we know, is this something where you do need maybe a little help, right? Go see somebody. And there need to be more resources to support this. The other thing we can't expect is just for free services. You know what I'm saying? Because I also know people that are in the mental health arena, mm-hmm. and they are swamped. And you get people who are also not willing to pay. Well, you get what you pay for. And so we've got to have the resources to support the mental health that we're seeing. I think especially if we can combine that with law enforcement so that you send in, I think it's Stephen Schultz, who's the president of the Fraternal Order of Police here in Denver and in Colorado. And he said, let's go in together. Let's bring a mental health professional along with law enforcement. Let the mental health professional deal with whatever issue is at hand. The law enforcement officer comes in to make sure the area is safe and secure so that no further harm can be done. But let's send them in pairs. Let's work together. Two by twos, right? I mean, it's not a bad idea if you think about it.
No, it's a great idea.
We've got to work smarter, not harder. So,
That treatment piece. I mean, I've been a few years. I've been off medication and so forth, but I did 7 years of treatment from seeing a therapist as well as a psychiatrist, and it was tremendously beneficial. Really putting me on a much better course for my life, and being able to provide more people with access to those kinds of resources who are dealing with deep mental health issues is so critical, especially in the wake, as you said, of COVID-19.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Young and old alike.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, Robin Carnes, our guest candidate for Centennial City Council District 1. We got a few minutes left with you, Robin. And one thing, of course, that we are seeing is a struggling economy. And it's not, you know, last year was government shutting down businesses, forcing them to close because of their idea that this is what we needed to do to combat the pandemic. Well, it put a lot of businesses in a very difficult position. Many had to close their doors. Some were hanging on. Now we are seeing, and you and I were just talking about this before our interview, we are seeing businesses that, especially restaurants, that were struggling for so long, and now they can't find people, especially because they are competing against the government providing massive unemployment benefits, which is a disincentive for people to get back in the job market. And it is putting businesses who've already been struggling in strife, so even more strife. So what do we need to do in terms of economic well-being and improving that in the city of Centennial, in your view, Robin?
Mm-hmm. You know what? How can we help our small businesses? We need to protect them by going to them and buying locally. We need to go eat at the restaurants. We need to maybe have a little more patience if the service isn't quite as fast as we'd like it to be. I mean, think about it. These are first world problems, right? But we know small businesses are the backbone of our community, right? I have had a small business in the past. My husband and I both had a business where it was called Kids Night Out, and we would put on programming for kids ages 7 to 14. It was a safe haven for them to come to on Friday and Saturday nights so that parents could go out and have a good time, and we would take care of their kids. They'd be in a safe place. And so the small business owners, I mean, they are working their tails off. I also think we need to think real long and hard about minimum wage. I mean, because as we increase that minimum wage, our small business owners cannot hire additional help. Right. And they can't compete with the big companies. I just talked to a friend who's closing her doors after 7 years. Her name is Jen, and she owns Waters Edge Winery, right? You know Waters Edge Winery, right in your streets of Southland. And she said, I just can't do it. I can't compete. That my help can get better offers elsewhere. And that is like a wonderful patriotic place to go and enjoy, you know, music and good food and wine. And it's like they can't do it anymore. And so we've got to think on a more local perspective. And I'll tell you, I didn't get this right away because I grew up in, again, a farming community, and my parents would buy locally. They would pay more to buy a car from the local car dealership than they would to go to the city because they understood how it's all related. It's all connected. And it's like you move to the city and, oh my gosh, we could shop here. We could go shop at Amazon. But what does that do for our small businesses? Yeah. Again, first world problems. Spend a little bit more and support the local businesses. That's how we're going to do it.
Well, and
we've got to think that way.
And in a government context, it's supporting local businesses, but also getting government out of the way real quick.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. They have no business being involved.
Less regulation, right?
That's regulation. Absolutely. We don't need that. They get in the way and they cause stress. Unnecessary stress for our small businesses. We see it over and over again.
All right. So, we're out of time, unfortunately. We will have you back. But Robin Carnes, candidate for Centennial City Council, where can people go to learn more about you and your campaign?
Go to carnesforcentennial.com. www.carnesforcentennial.com. We'd love to have you come learn more, volunteer, donate, get involved.
carnesforcentennial.com. Best of luck to you, Robin, and thanks so much for joining us here on the show.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Well, that is it for us today here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. My thanks to all of our great guests today. Never fear, we will be back same time, same place next Saturday night with more engaging, intelligent talk, Sang style, right here on News Talk 710 KNUS. Have a great rest of weekend. And as always, may God bless America.